Good morning, I'm Laura Kanoy on New Hampshire Public Radio, and this is The Exchange. The Northern Italian community of Reggio Emilia has been a pioneer in early childhood education and development. Shortly after World War II, the town established Italy's first public preschools. About 25 years ago, it developed an approach to early childhood care that's been copied throughout Western Europe. Reggio Emilia has also come to the United States, thanks in part to UNH Associate Professor Rebecca New, who joins me in the studio this morning. And thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Just give us a few basics about Reggio Emilia. It covers children from infancy to 6 years old.
Yes.
And it's strongly based on community support. That's the real important part of this.
Well, it's based on a number of things that reflect broader Italian cultural values, which includes a national commitment to children and families that's reflected in more recent state laws that provide preschool services, for example, for all 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old children throughout the entire country. In many ways, Reggio Emilia has managed to capitalize on an Italian interpretation of children's needs and family rights and responsibilities by providing this municipally funded program of support for young children.
So it's municipally funded, like I think I read that 12% of
yes, approximately
the town's budget.
12% of the city budget is dedicated to the provision of infant, toddler, and pre-primary school programs. These programs serve approximately half of the children in Reggio Emilia. The other half of the 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old children are attending other forms of preschool programs that are provided by the state, by the church, or by private agencies.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, talk more about this idea of community support. Beyond devoting X percent of the budget, the idea of community support goes a lot broader and deeper than that with this method.
Yes, it does. In fact, one of the ways to illustrate that principle, I think, is the fact that not only does the city council include representatives from the parent organizations that provide what we might refer to as local control of the schools, but that citizens of the community who do not even have children in these programs are also members of the Italian interpretation of a PTO kind of organization.
PTO, parent-teacher organization.
Yes.
I can hear people thinking in the United States, some people think, why should I even pay taxes because I don't have kids in the public schools? But it's different there. You're saying people even without kids put their money and time in.
Yes, there are a number of ways of perhaps explaining that, although I'll confess that it's something that I've spent a lot of years trying to understand and I'm still working on it. In principle, Italian children are seen themselves as citizens with rights. And the provision, therefore, of something like daycare is seen as a public service that should be available to anyone who needs it, much the way we might think of a public library or having clean water to drink. The provision of services for young children are also seen as entitlements of citizenship, and young children are seen as having those kinds of rights. Now, the Italian interpretation of children's rights doesn't separate them, however, from their families and the communities within which they live. In other words, children have the right to not only be cared for outside of the home, but in the home as well. Therefore, Italy has some of the most progressive social services, child care policies, family leave policies, and family support policies that you'll find any place in the world. So this definition of children as being entitled to certain kinds of services that are provided by the taxpayers reflects a larger Italian attitude about citizenship and the characteristics of a civilized society.
So people without kids feel like it's a part of a broader societal goal, even
yes,
though they personally don't have kids.
Yes, it's seen as a critical element, in fact, of a societal responsibility.
I want to give listeners more of a feel for this program and the Reggio Emilia approach, but I have to say that I'm already struck by the differences between that idea of community and our responsibility and here in the United States, where it's quite different, where it's a more individualistic society. And I don't know how you translate the Reggio Emilia model to the U.S. Our character is so different from that Italian character that you're describing.
Well, you've just now identified some of the major obstacles, but I also think that it's fair to say that Americans are beginning to recognize that our cultural bias towards independence and autonomy isn't necessarily working as well for us as it might have in the earlier pioneer days when we were forming our national identity. Clearly, the concepts of collaboration and cooperation are becoming, perhaps they're only buzzwords, but I think, in fact, that there are genuine efforts at the business level, certainly within school reform efforts, and in many ways across communities, it's becoming clear that we can't always manage to do things by ourselves. And that a collective and collaborative effort is not only sometimes more fun and more personally satisfying, but in fact it's more effective. So I believe that while on the one hand our competitive orientation and our individualistic and meritocratic interpretation of how people ought to see themselves and what they should aspire to continue to motivate some of our thinking and our prioritizing and certainly some interpretations of our political process. Nonetheless, there are many Americans who are beginning to appreciate that that it, with a little help from other people who have something to contribute to the effort, we're capable of achieving more of our goals, which are increasingly complex.
So you think Americans are ready to come together in more of a community support type of way?
Well, I have to be optimistic.
Yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't be able to
I'm a little less optimistic. But.
Well, I also think that it's important to be realistic, though, and to understand why this is going to be particularly difficult for us to provide for children if we remain convinced that children's needs are private matters, that it's up to the individual family to care for children. I remain concerned with the strategy of referring to children as our future, although lots of people have made very clear the indications of what will happen at the social and financial levels if we don't do a better job of taking care of children. There is an economic rationale there that says we really need to take care of children.
Sure. If they're ill-prepared, then our future looks pretty bad.
Yes. I my more idealistic and perhaps naive goal is that we will begin to recognize that children have a future of their own, and it's really our responsibility to take care of them, not just because they will end up costing us less money somewhere down the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's a goal that perhaps is in the long run, but it's certainly something that motivates me.
Mm-hmm. Again, talking about this idea of community support, when I lived in Washington, D.C., depending on the apartment building I lived in, I didn't even know my neighbors.
Yeah.
I mean, I said hello to some people who lived maybe across the hall, but that was it. Now, I lived in another building, which was different, and everybody knew each other and had parties together. But many of us live in situations where we really don't even know the folks down the hall. So I was reading about Reggio Emilia and thinking, well, this sounds great, but how do you do this in, you know, New York City or Washington, D.C., or even, you know, Concord, New Hampshire?
Well, it's an interesting question that's not irrelevant at the Italian national level as well.
They have big cities, too, Rome
yes.
and Florence.
I just came back from a conference in Milan 2 weeks ago, and as a part of that experience was invited to visit a variety of child care centers and preschool programs, as well as what we might call family support centers. Milan's a very large industrialized city with a great deal of the kinds of disconnections that you just described. The city's interpretation of its own responsibility to those individuals and those families differs markedly in many ways from interpretations in this country, although I would say some of the problems are just the same.
People don't know each other. People feel no connection to each
yes.
other.
And there are parents who are remarkably isolated, or mm-hmm. perhaps we can say that there are mothers who are isolated if the husbands are going out to work. The response to those contemporary characteristics of of an adult's daily life or a child's daily routine, the response is that we should do something about that because that's not good for anyone. Mm-hmm. In fact, much of the legal incentive or the incentive behind the legal supports for preschool for young children as well as infant toddler centers is that children need to spend time with individuals other than the members of their immediate nuclear family. There's also the belief that adults need the support, the companionship, the resources that are available by other people. And in some ways, contemporary policies behind daycare in particular in Italy are in response to the changing demographics of the nuclear family in terms of dwindling family size, the mobility of families, the fact that grandparents are now themselves perhaps employed, as well as the growth of industrialized cities. So Italy has some of the same characteristics of urban life that you're describing, but the response is that, okay, we should do something about this. And in many ways, the services that are provided that seem to be directed specifically towards children, in fact, provide forms of support for family members as well.
Well, you talk to new mothers who have left their jobs, and I've had friends who've just had kids, and they've left their jobs for 3-4 months to take care of the new baby, and boy, they're just dying for adult contact. Yeah. And contact with the outside world.
Yeah, well, that's a common need that is not just particular to this country. I think that there is a recognition of that in this country as well. We may not be as organized. We may not have the national legislation that says it's our responsibility to do something about that. And in fact, I remain concerned that it's dependent on the finances of local settings to make appropriate responses. Nonetheless, there are many such appropriate responses being made. I can mention the city of Dover.
Here in New Hampshire.
Here in New Hampshire, which certainly would not be on anyone's list as a city that has sufficient financial resources to indulge in anything that would be seen as a luxury. Yet Dover, for the last several years, in great part as a result of a ready-to-learn task force that grew out of the statewide Success by Six initiative, has developed a family support center that goes by the acronym The Hub, Healthy Universal Beginnings, and it provides a variety of services for all Dover citizens who might be in need of parenting information, access or referral information to social services that are available in the Dover community, or who simply want a place to come to visit with other parents and have an opportunity to either observe their children playing in a setting that's been designed for young children, to check out educational toys, library materials, or to find someone to listen to if you've just had a bad day with a very quarrelsome 2 or 3 year old child. Mm. So if a place like Dover is able to recognize that need and respond to it, then it makes me optimistic that the role of the community in supporting families is becoming increasingly important in this country as well.
Where else in the United States is this concept of Reggio Emilia, community-supported child care, going on?
Well, in fact, your take on Reggio Emilia, which is correct, about the community support, is not something that's acknowledged very much mm-hmm. in this country as people learn more about Reggio Emilia.
So Dover wouldn't say, oh, we're practicing Reggio Emilia.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
And in fact, I would say that that's appropriate. We're not Reggio Emilia, mm-hmm. neither in Dover or Concord or any place else. Our country and our states and our communities have our own set of strengths, our own interpretations of our needs and the resources that are available to meet those needs. Therefore, I could not point to any such community that is being influenced by Reggio Emilia. On the other hand, there are I think it's fair to say that there are thousands of teachers now in the U.S. who have been inspired, some of them individually, some of them in pairs, in some cases entire school staff, who've been inspired to rethink, reexamine their approaches to the care and education of young children, their relationships with family members and the larger community, and in fact, their professional relationships with one another.
You've written that the Italian experience challenges the notion held by some people in America that it's bad for kids to get care outside the home, that they're better off staying at home with the parents. And you're saying Reggio Emilia challenges that it's quite healthy for them, actually.
Not just in Reggio Emilia, yes. Mm-hmm. There are some wonderful preschool and child care programs in other parts of Italy as well, among them some of those that I visited in Milan, as well as those in smaller cities such as Pistoia, which is very near Florence. I think anyone visiting a center where families are welcome and parental input into the care and education of young children is seen as not just something that you put up with, but that you actively seek out, where teachers see one of their roles in providing a good educational environment for children as, where teachers believe that they themselves need to study the children they're caring for so that they can provide better care and better education. It's very difficult for anyone to imagine that those kinds of environments are not good for young children. Of course, let me make another point of reference that I've only recently come to understand, and that is that there is also in Italy a nationwide practice that has reached almost unimaginable heights in Reggio Emilia that's called inserimento. It's the process by which children are inserted, if you want to use the literal translation of that term, into some form of out-of-home care, which would mean if you were an infant or toddler, it would be in an infant-toddler daycare center, or if you're a preschool-age child, it would be your entry into a pre-primary program. This process of inserimento, as practiced in places like Reggio Emilia, involves some family member accompanying the child for as long as 2 or 3 weeks into the child care setting.
So they don't just drop them off and go away, and that image of, you know, mommy leaving the baby at daycare and then the baby crying.
Right.
They
in
stick
fact,
around.
It's a very carefully negotiated process that is also supported by labor laws, whereby an employer is required to give the employee up to 3 weeks of time off.
Oh, that's different.
Speaking with an administrator in Milan about this experience, it was explained to me, well, the child only leaves the home for the first time once in her life, and so it's very important to us that we make sure that that process is a good one, good for everybody.
I can't help but feel cynical that American businesses, many of which fought tooth and nail to even give 12 weeks of unpaid leave to take care of a child or a sick family member, I can't in my wildest dreams imagine an American business giving me 3 weeks off to integrate my child into daycare. It's beyond my imagination.
I'm nodding my head as you say that because it's beyond my comprehension, too. I think the point that's worth making, though, is that if the appropriate support services are made available, that an initial transition that might be unsettling in some cases, I think it's probably fair to say it's more unsettling for the parents than for the child, that when the difficulties of that initial transition are acknowledged and supports are provided, that everyone, families, children, and educators, as well as members of a community, can begin to recognize that children's out-of-home experiences can not only be a reasonable substitute if both parents are employed, for example, but it can be a remarkably beneficial addition to the quality of that child's life. Again, there is an Italian cultural attitude about what a good day looks like that says that children, as well as adults, benefit from the opportunity to develop high-quality, personally meaningful, long-term relationships with a variety of people other than just the members of the immediate family.
All right. We'll invite listeners to join the discussion here on The Exchange. The number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477, that 800 number made possible by Frontier Communications. We get support from area businesses, including Eastern Analytical of Concord, providing engineers, industries, and municipalities with reliable environmental laboratory and tank testing services for 15 years. Also, Bank of New Hampshire, with a complete range of mortgage options, all serviced in New Hampshire. We also get support from our contributing listeners. 1-800-892-6477. Join me with Dr. Rebecca New. She's an associate professor of early childhood education at UNH, and she's an expert on the Reggio Emilia model of childcare developed in Italy. She was also the featured speaker at a conference in Concord last night. 1-800-892-6477. And you should be able to hear those calls once they start coming in. Reggio Emilia also focuses on long-term projects for kids. And when I read that, I thought, well, that sounds pretty hefty for little ones. What types of long-term projects are we talking about?
Actually, the long-term projects cover everything from love and aging, shadows and reflections, to how to create a life-size baby dinosaur out on a football field. In many ways, children's project explorations in Reggio Emilia not only belie our notions of young children as having very short attention spans, but have led me to think that perhaps it's the teachers who have the short attention spans, because we're less accustomed to listening to and observing children's responses to experiences that matter a great deal to them, and then figuring out how to build on those interests. But in fact, that's a skill that the Reggio Emilia teachers have developed and refined beyond most of our expectations and understandings.
So they're not doing term papers or anything like that. But long-term projects that take a couple months.
Yes, I can give an example. A colleague, Badgie Rankin, who is a student in at Boston University, went to Reggio Emilia to study a project in the fall, thinking that she'd come back home by November. In November, she had to consult with advisors and called me because I was organizing a conference, that I can't come home yet, they're not finished. And in fact, the children didn't finish their dinosaur project until later in the spring, because the mathematical concepts that they were struggling with in terms of trying to figure out how to reproduce to scale a life-size dinosaur were so complex that the children went in a variety of directions exploring what we would call very complex math skills in order to achieve their goal.
1-800-892-6477. We're talking with Rebecca New, Associate Professor of Early Childhood Education at the University of New Hampshire. And good morning to Sarah in Hopkinton. Sarah, good morning.
Am I on?
You sure are.
I just wanted to ask you a question, but first to give you a little ammunition for this very important cause. You know, the New York Times Sunday paper of September 10th, it's a very interesting article called The Decline of the Nice Guy Quotient. And it shows, of course, you know that the IQ of our children is declining, but the people who do IQ tests are trying to work up a test for emotional well-being of children, stability and health. And they've been working on it for 20 years, and they show, what do they show? That for the last 20 years, the emotional stability and well-being of our children has also been declining. This is terribly, terribly important, because that's the major predictor of future success, and if you don't have it, you have teen pregnancy, you have violence, you have all the things that you really don't want to see in your culture. So it strikes me that more attention to both the mothering of our children and their treatment in daycare, that idea of a period to adjust the child to daycare so it's not just abandoned, which is going to gut to affect their emotional stability.
Yes. Thank you. Am I talking too loud? Is this okay? Is your name Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
I missed just the beginning of your remarks as we were trying to get my headphone adjusted, but what I think I heard you say was to express a concern about the declining emotional stability of young children in this country?
Well, it's being tested, and there's an article in the New York Times, September 10th, a Sunday paper, which I think you would find wonderful ammunition, because they're trying to develop a test of children's emotional stability, and they've been doing it for about 20 years. And for 20 years, they found the emotional well-being of our children has been declining.
Yes, I think I did see that article. I have some questions about how valid the testing process is for emotional stability, but I would agree with you that there are enough changes in our society to make anyone begin to express some concerns about whether or not our children are feeling as safe, as secure, as supported, as protected as we might wish that they would.
Well, I was arguing that if you dump a child into daycare, especially an infant, you know, zip and bam, and you've been with mother, and now you're with strangers, that's got to affect the emotion, create insecurity, fear, and anger, I would think. I mean, I know that...
I agree with you. I don't know any parent, and I'm speaking now as a parent as much as a professional, who feels that that would be the right thing to do, and yet there are a number of parents who feel like they have absolutely no choice.
Yeah, no time.
Yeah. Well,
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
In Italy, where you've just been, how long is the family leave when you have a new infant?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not going to be able to give you as much detail as I wish I could, because I haven't memorized all the numbers. But just for starters, a woman's insurance coverage basically requires that she take off the last 2 months of her pregnancy and stay home
the first three months. I've had friends who've been almost ready to give birth, still sitting at their desks.
Well, there certainly would be some American women, I suspect, who wouldn't want to be told that they had to go home 7 months prenatally. On the other hand, the interpretation in Italy is that the well-being of the mother and the baby should be provided for, and that insurance companies and employers should support that interpretation. There are then a variety of parental leave policies, and here's where I'm going to disappoint both of us by not being able to give you the details, whereby parents can retain at least a portion of their salary as well as job security for various ages throughout the first several years of life.
Sarah, I'm going to have to let you go because we've got a couple other callers.
Yes,
but thanks
you.
For calling in. Okay. 1-800-892-6477. Moving on to Nina in Lee.
Hello, my name is Nina.
Go ahead.
First, I was going to ask what connection there might be between Maria Montessori's concern for the mentally handicapped, developmentally delayed children in Italy some years ago and the Reggio Emilio. But then as I listened to the previous caller, it came to me speaking about emotional security. How many of us adults have sought long-term therapy in one form or another to correct for many years of emotional insecurity relative to our treatment as young children when we had parents who didn't know about the basic needs? And also, I feel that a child is indeed safe in the community, because otherwise the nuclear family can be such a closed system that when it's dysfunctional, the child is actually trapped in that dysfunctional environment.
Nina, those are both questions that I'd like to respond to. Let me briefly back to your first one about the relationship with Maria Montessori and the Reggio Emilia schools.
Yeah.
I will remind you and other listeners that, in fact, Maria Montessori was an Italian.
Yeah.
And so many of the aspects that Americans identify as being particularly Montessori are, in fact, more reflective of the larger Italian culture. Certainly, she deserves to be acknowledged and applauded for her interpretation of the possibilities and potentials that were that young children with disabilities have, as well as their rights to be cared for and educated in an environment that respects them as individuals and members of a society. That principle, I'm going to call that a principle of inclusion, is reflected throughout Italy in its treatment today of individuals, including young children, but not only young children, with what we can refer to generically as developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. There are virtually no separate forms of services or schooling for young children with special needs, unless it is absolutely impossible for those needs to be met in a public school setting. Mm-hmm. And their definition of what is possible and what is impossible certainly stretches American interpretations. Mm. I've seen young children who are multiply challenged with a variety of physical and psychological disabilities. Mm-hmm. Who have been included in, for example, in the Reggio Emilia program since they were infants. And in fact, their friends, their classmates, seem to participate during my observations in some of their therapies. They are clearly members of the community. That leads me to the second point about the emotional security. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that this is an Italian cultural value, again, that individuals are not isolated from one another. The sense of an individual's need to be a contributing and valued member of a group is reflected in a variety of traditions, both family traditions, community traditions, the national tradition of everyone going home and having lunch together in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't even have dinner together.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, well, I when I was first studying in Italy in a little town far away from Reggio Emilia with my infant son, I was at a shoe store trying to convince myself that I needed to spend all of this money on a pair of shoes for him. My difficulty was twofold. One was that Italian clothing for young children is very expensive. And the other was that, in my own opinion, a baby who's just learning to walk really didn't need a pair of leather shoes on. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the entire community where we lived insisted that I was not taking proper care of this baby if I didn't put shoes on him, that he needed to have shoes if he was going to learn to walk, and clearly I needed to buy shoes for him if I was going to be a respected adult in that community. In other words, there was a community interpretation that created a kind of pressure on me to provide the community's definition of appropriate care.
Hmm.
When I was in this shoe store, a family who had much less money to spend, I'm quite sure, than I did, came in and began to question the store clerk about me, not realizing that I could understand the conversation. Finally, with amusement, the store clerk turned and said, "Why don't you ask the signora?" And the question asked of me was, "Is it really true that in America you not only do not get to eat lunch with your family members, but you only have a half of an hour and maybe half of a sandwich?" Since, in fact, that absolutely described my own lifestyle when I was back in the States, mm-hmm. I said, "Yes, that is true." And this couple, like I said, who seemed to me to be quite impoverished, looked at each other and looked back at me and said, "Poverini, you poor people."
Then
said, "Noi siamo gentili, we are civilized. We understand what is important." Certainly what is important in Italy is that families and children be valued and respected, mm-hmm. and be given the opportunities as well as the resources to benefit from each other.
Nina, I've got another call waiting, but thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, 1-800-892-6477. Join me in the discussion with Dr. Rebecca New. She's Associate Professor of Early Childhood Education at UNH, and she's an expert on the Reggio Emilia model of childcare developed in Italy. Moving on to Wendy in Durham. Good morning.
Hi, this is Wendy Durhack calling from Durham, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the director of a child care center right here in Durham. And I'm calling just to kind of support what Rebecca's having to say about the importance of the community. We find certainly in this field that we need support to do a good job, and there's not enough support out there. And one of the things we've done, I am the director of Forest Park Child Care Center, and we formed a collaborative with the Durham Infant Center and the Durham Children's Center because we realize as a profession that we need to support each other and start working together to help meet the needs of children in our community. We also have two school-age programs in the community. And children are, I mean, literally, we're raising children. We're their extended family. During the day, they're with us, and then after school, they come and join us in our after-school programs. And we're the ones that get to hear about their days and to have snack with them and to share their experiences. And it's really, it is sad that parents are not able to be a more part of that process. And I think a lot of that is because our communities and our businesses don't support good parenting. And parents actually get penalized when they're trying to be a good parent and take time off from work if their child is sick or if they have an event at school they want to attend. Often their place of work penalizes for them for that in some way. So I would really, I think the Reggio Emilia model is a wonderful one. And I hope that listeners will discover that we really need to embrace our children and our families. And when we're voting and making decisions, that we support that in our communities. Mm.
Thank you, Wendy, for calling in, and good morning to you. I'm aware of your work at Forest Park. My own daughter went to the Durham Infant Center, and I think it's fair to say that I agree with everything that you've just said. I think it's important to acknowledge that Reggio Emilia is not the only place that is that has its acts together, so to speak, or Italy's not the only nation. There are a number of examples of employer-supported family leave kinds of policies, flexible time, on-site daycare, et cetera, that, again, give me, perhaps naively, some optimism that even the business community is beginning to recognize that, to go back to the busy bee model, workers aren't so productive if, in fact, they're worried about the care of their young
they're
children.
Unhappy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe, Rebecca, you could share some ideas on how community members can get involved. I think often people don't know how to be helpful. I think, you know, supporting fundraisers, of course, is one way. There's never enough money in this profession. But also, you know, volunteering, getting to know what child care is about, and inviting children and to their workplace for that experience, reaching out. I mean, that we need to come up with ways that the community and child care centers can connect, can bond.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I wish I had better answers to give to your question because it's something that I think we need to figure out how to do. One of the things that is clear to me that Reggio Emilia has maximized far beyond my imagination is the way in which they advocate for young children. There is an exhibition that's traveling around the U.S. right now. It's been here since 1987 that has come from Reggio Emilia. And the name of that exhibit is The 100 Languages of Children. It will be housed or hosted at the Montshire Museum this summer, which is in Norwich, Vermont, just across the border from Hanover, opening on June 24th through August 4th. And I'm hoping that listeners will hear more about that as the year goes on. But in any case, this exhibit is a compelling documentation of the possibilities and capabilities of young children in environments that nurture them, that recognize their capacities, and that respond to those capabilities that young children have with both creativity and a great deal of endeavor on the part of the adults that are involved. When parents and citizens become aware of what it is that good child care looks like and what a difference good child care makes in the lives of everyone, not just the child, him or herself,
right,
not even just the family, but the quality of life in the community at large, then I think we're more likely to get broader-based community support.
Right, so maybe part of what our role as professionals in this field is to educate people, to get the word out in the community about what is going on, and invite people to be a part of that.
Yes, I'm nodding. I think that we used to believe that roles of leadership and advocacy were assigned to just a few, an outspoken few within the profession, hopefully those who were also articulate and well-informed. But nonetheless, I would say the average good early childhood classroom teacher or child care provider probably didn't see advocacy as a part of, I'd like to say, his or her job, but then you and I both know how many men are in this
field. That's right.
I think it is part of our job. We need to get people to pay better attention to the work that we're doing and to understand that it's not just a need that children have, but it's a possibility of their lives and therefore a responsibility of ours.
Wendy, thanks for your call. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Rebecca, we've talked a lot about community, and I think we've struck a real nerve there. But I also want to talk to you about the curriculum, what the kids do all day at these centers in Reggio Emilia and throughout Italy and Western Europe. And one of the things that you have emphasized in your writing about it is the use of art. I think you said that art is inseparable from the rest of the curriculum. Now, kids in daycare centers, you know, here also use art, but what's the difference?
Oh, that's a fun question to answer, although I probably won't be satisfied with my response because it's a very complex concept. I think Americans, myself included, have typically viewed art and, let's say, the creativity that goes into artistic production as the domain of a limited elite few among us. We refer to people as being, oh, she's creative, or, oh, I'm not creative at all. We see it as some kind of genetic predisposition that may be a little bit influenced by environmental experiences, but it's not something that we see as a goal of the average citizen. Loris Malaguzzi, who was the founding father of the Reggio Emilia programs that we're speaking about this morning, thought that was all wrong. He saw humans, his focus was on young children, as having a wide array of communicative and expressive capabilities that were typically ignored and therefore underdeveloped or undeveloped. He saw the societal emphasis on reading and writing and talking. In other words, the various forms of literacy that characterize our modes of communication as important, but remarkably inadequate in expressing the capabilities that humans actually have. The name of the exhibition that I referred to a few moments ago, The 100 Languages of Children, is a metaphor for his belief that children have many ways of both exploring and then communicating their ideas, their experiences, their feelings, their understandings. They rarely use the term art in Reggio Emilia to describe this process of incorporating some forms of symbolic representation into their work. Yet it is a constant feature. Children in Reggio Emilia are frequently encouraged, for example, to explain themselves through drawing, to draw their understanding of where the water comes from as it enters the fountain in the city park downtown.
So it's not just considered fun.
No, in fact, it's. I think we use the word fun in this country quite loosely. I think we all recognize that sometimes working very, very hard in a very serious way on something that's really important to us might be called fun, but that's probably not the best word for it. I've seen children in Reggio Emilia struggle over long periods of time to really accurately represent their understanding, for example, of the root system of a tree in a windstorm, or the sources of a rain, or the differences in thunder clouds, or more poignantly, what it was that made them frightened when they thought about the Persian Gulf War. Teachers use children's drawings then to encourage children to reflect on, these words are starting to sound a little bit jargony, but they actually ask the children, now show me here what you mean. And then the child will go back to the drawing and start, in a sense, thinking out loud and saying, well, here's where the water comes. And by referring back to the drawing, which was supposed to represent the child's understanding, the child herself is in a position to say, oh, wait a minute, I left out one part. And so here comes the eraser. And the child begins to correct not only the drawing, but the representation of the understanding. In a project where children were studying shadows, and this is a project that grew out of the children's own shadow play, children did a lot of hypothesizing if the sun's over here, where might the shadow be?
Mm-hmm.
And some children's hypotheses were very different from one another, and the teacher would then say, well, how are you going to find out? So back they went outside, or if it was a cloudy day, out came the flashlights. As children began to test their hypotheses, which were made clear to one another through their drawings. So the product of this suggests to us that these children have remarkable artistic capabilities. And in fact, I've met a number of educators in this country who simply do not believe that the drawings have been done by average Italian 4- and 5-year-olds.
Huh.
But in fact, they draw so often, and they're given so mm-hmm. many opportunities to go back and critique their own drawings that they do develop a high degree of what I guess we could call technical skill or representational skill. But the goal is to communicate their understandings. And it is certainly a hallmark of this approach. Our understanding of it requires us to rethink what we mean about creativity and communication.
Huh, interesting. 800-892-6477. Alice in Merrimack, thanks for waiting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fascinated with your program this morning, and I'm particularly interested in young children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to visit Rome, and I was struck by how valued the children were, how beautifully dressed they were, but also by a young man that lived in my neighborhood with Down syndrome, who was dressed so nicely every morning, was greeted by everyone in the neighborhood, got on the bus to go to, I'm guessing, a job or to visit a family member. The difference in the feeling of how children and how the individuals with disabilities that I saw were treated left me wondering how it could be so different than in this country.
That was in Rome, Alice.
In Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in how children with disabilities, Down syndrome, or developmental disabilities are taken into these child care situations.
Thank you, Alice. You've raised an important point, one that I think we can be optimistic about as we look at efforts to include young children with special needs and older children as well in public school settings. It is absolutely the case, as I mentioned in my response to the question about Maria Montessori, that there is a longer and well-entrenched cultural tradition in Italy to not separate individuals out, either from their families or from the community. In other words, the ethic of inclusion is almost unspoken. I'm thinking of a researcher who was attempting to discern high school students' attitudes about inclusion, and in he asked.
Was this an Italian researcher or U.S.?
I honestly don't know. I was told this story.
Oh.
But the researcher asked the Italian. I suspect it was a U.S. researcher, because you only ask questions if you've thought that there's something unusual about the situation in the first place. The researcher asked the students how they felt about having gone to school with, and then they referred to a child in their class who had some disability. The high school students didn't know how to answer the question. They asked him to repeat it several times.
Uh-huh. They didn't. It was such a non-issue for
them. It was a non-issue. Mm-hmm. They didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. And the question was, how did you feel or how did you think about going to school with him? It was like, well, how did I feel about going to school with my next-door neighbor? Mm-hmm. What do you mean? What's unusual about this? So there is that Italian cultural value of inclusion that we need to keep in mind. There has also been, over the last several decades, explicit unwillingness to place children in specialized programs as a function of their special needs. Although there is also now a concomitant concern about going too far in the other direction and not providing children with specialized services if they need them.
Not quite enough,
yeah.
Then.
In other words, there's always a direction of an error that might be made. But in Reggio Emilia, as is the case in other municipally funded preschool programs, children who have any version of a special need are given priority in enrollment in these programs, and they are included in the fullest extent possible.
All right, we're going to move along to Pat in Warner. Good morning.
Hi. This is Pat.
Yes, hi, go ahead, Pat.
I wanted to make a couple points. One is when you're talking about the community support in our current ways of, you know, moms having to go back to work and all that, I didn't have the benefit of having a mother, grandmother, aunts around, and that isolation was really impacting my children when they were infants and toddlers. And I found a way of getting around that as far as I went back to school and found a nurturing environment in a lab school. And I think that what's important is there was no one to give me that role model that what I was going through was normal, or that how to manage the kids. You know, I didn't have role models for that, and no feedback and time alone to regroup. And I think that's important when people think that you're just dumping kids in daycare. If the care is good, then they're benefiting as much as the mother and the family is. The other thing is, when you're looking at some of the ways we're teaching kids right now in the public school level, I realize you're talking about early childhood. If you can understand their needs and encourage their individual interests rather than pushing an agenda, the children do learn, and I think you've expressed that in some of the models she's talking about with, some of the projects the kids have worked on. And I don't think there's enough teachers right now in our public schools, anyway, in New Hampshire, that are fully understanding that individual learning styles, or they're not in an environment that supports them encouraging that. Mm. And I wanted to know if we could approach that. And then just when you were just talking about special ed, we do a lot about inclusion and special ed and meeting those needs. And I just wanted to make the comment, we don't always hit the same support on the high end, the kids that are advanced and need some special needs to get ahead of maybe where their peers are, because a lot of the money goes to funding the kids that are at the other end of the scale, which is good. I mean, they both need it.
Yeah, let's let Rebecca respond because we're running out of time.
Okay.
Thank you, Pat. I think you didn't even have a question in your first one. You were sharing your own personal experiences about how important it is to have role models, support, feedback, and time to be a human being yourself. Your second question is really important to me, and I'd like to remind you and other listeners that the field of early childhood covers children from birth through age 8, which goes up through the third grade of elementary schools.
Right.
Therefore, if you take the average elementary school of kindergarten through fifth grade, K-1, 2, and 3, four of those six grade levels are, in fact, within the field of early childhood. So I'm absolutely comfortable in suggesting that the principles that I'm making reference to, as well as the practices in Reggio Emilia, are applicable to our work with young children in elementary school settings as well. In fact, there are a number of schools and school systems in the United States who are looking at the Reggio Emilia model as a way of improving the entire elementary school curriculum, because they share your belief that the agenda, the educational agenda for young children, must acknowledge children's own interests, abilities, needs, and preferences. No one would argue that young children in this country need to acquire literacy skills. No one would argue that we need to promote the acquisition of scientific concepts and numerical competencies. There is a great deal of argument, however, about whether or not children can acquire such skills through worksheets, through activities that have little or no connection to one another, or little or no meaning, personal or otherwise, to the young children. The curriculum contents in Reggio Emilia are sufficiently broad and complex so that they not only enable children to acquire what we would refer to as the basic skills, but they also provide opportunities for a diverse group of learners, including those that you've mentioned that might be at the high end as well as the low end of intellectual competencies, that when the activities are broadly defined enough that all children can find something that's challenging, that's meaningful, and that contributes to their acquisition of the kinds of skills and concepts that are needed for contemporary life.
Okay, we're going to move on to Ruth and Hancock. And Ruth, we've just got about a minute, so go ahead, please.
Okay, I'll try to
Sorry to do that to you.
That's all right. I just wanted to say that before everybody rushes off to Italy to get this wonderful daycare, let me tell you quickly about my 3-year-old grandson in Florence's experience just this fall. He's in a municipal daycare.
In Florence, Italy.
In Florence, Italy. Mm-hmm. And is really having a poor experience. His parents were not allowed to stay with him for the first several days. They're not allowed to visit. He is asked to explain what it is that he's drawn, and then tells him that he must stay within the lines when he does some coloring.
Hmm.
So, I got any suggestions as to how we can improve the situation?
Ruth, let me respond quickly. You've given a good example of why it's never helpful for us to assume that there's one perfect model that's going to explain everything. And I hope that I've been clear that Reggio Emilia is a particular example of a larger cultural approach, but that doesn't mean that everyone in Italy is lockstep in sync with ways to respond to young children. I don't have advice for your particular grandson and his parents that's any different than I would make to any parents of young children, which is that a child care setting that doesn't allow the parents to visit and provide support for the child is a child care setting that doesn't have the child's best interest in mind.
All right, Ruth, we're going to end it there, and thanks for calling The Exchange. And I want to thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Dr. Rebecca New, she's an associate professor of early childhood education at UNH. She's an expert on the Reggio Emilia model of childcare developed in Italy and was the featured speaker at a conference in Concord last night. New Hampshire Public Radio is supported by our members and by DocuSearch, retrieving information and documents for the legal and banking communities from outlets nationwide for more than 17 years. Join us on Sunday, November 19th for our second annual celebration of wine. You'll have a chance to tour the newly renovated Capital Center for the Arts and sample more than 100 different wines and champagnes. For details and tickets, call 1-800-639-4131. Up next, classical music with Carl Watanabe. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Laura Kanoy.